Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
/7:55 is real with David O'Brien and Eric O'Flaherty is on the air now. Welcome back. 7:55 is real and we are live. David O'Brien, Braves writer with The Athletic. And I'm with Eric O'Flaherty, former Braves reliever extraordinaire. What's up, Eric?
Not much. What's going on?
Eric was talking about his frustrations on the golf course this weekend. I told him I don't do that shit, so I don't have those frustrations.
I really don't get mad out there. Unless the people I'm playing with are taking it too serious, then I won't have any fun.
It was just the people, that's right.
You don't like
the people.
So you're not going pro. You're going to work on Monday. Either way, it's okay to shoot 85. Let's have a good time.
Well, since we last talked, the Braves have certainly made some it's incremental progress, but it's progress. There's no doubt. I mean, this was the best week they've put together. You had a 4-3 week against the two teams with the best, with the most wins in the NL. I think the Dodgers are probably still acknowledged as the best team in the NL, but the two division leaders in the East and the Central, 4-3 against the Mets and Brewers. Split with the Mets. That great 9-2 win on the last day, and then you take 2 of 3 from the Brewers with another 9-2 win. So, I think it's a sign of two things: it's all starting to come together a lot more, and the offense is really starting to click a little bit. And that's not a coincidence. Why Acuña makes a huge difference atop the
order. Huge difference.
Huge.
And just seeing those big, you know, blowout win. It's a day off for your pen. It's a day off for, you know, everybody on your team. Just to have some breathing room in a few games, you know, it's amazing what that does for the vibe in the clubhouse to just beat the doors off somebody and not have a stressful win or loss for a day or two. You know, that your relievers aren't double barreled down in the pen the whole game. Matzik got a chance to get a little work inning in, which you can't do that when it's 1-1 in the ninth. Right. You know, it's good to see the offense doing that type of stuff.
Like I said, this is no coincidence that this offensive strides made in the last week are directly correlate with Ronald Acuña playing a lot more, returning for the first time, returning a couple weeks ago, but now playing basically every day, just played 3 days in a row, including a day game after a night game. So the rules are already kind of out the window that they had, which we thought were kind of unrealistic anyway. I mean, when he's in there playing really well, showing no signs of injury, and the offense is clicking, you're just going to sit him the next day because it's a day game after night game. I didn't think they'd do that, especially with them 5 or 6 games behind the Mets, and they're not doing that. So,
who knows if it was bothering him not hitting every day too. You know, you're trying to get him going, and he's not a guy that's, for me, that's going to succeed or feel his best sitting a day and then playing the next.
Yeah, so I'm expecting him to play basically every day. I think they'll rest him some day games after night games, but they didn't do that against the Brewers. They wanted to win that series, and he didn't feel bad, so why not? And I can't imagine him being really sore or anything because the guy looks phenomenal. He's running – literally, he's faster than he was before the surgery. There's no doubt in my mind. Watching him, it's noticeable. He's already stole 4 bases, dude. In 9 games, he's tied for 5th in the league in stolen bases.
Yeah, and for me, it's – seeing him use his speed is the number one sign that he's feeling great. You know, seeing him take bags and go hard on ground balls and everything like that, he's not playing timid.
How about that?
If you saw that, you'd want to give him some space.
How about that scoring from first base on Olsen's bloop double to left field?
God, he just flies.
He really looks good running right now, man.
And sometimes that, you know, guys, sometimes pitchers, you know, they come back from surgeries with – throwing harder or whatever. And it's not the surgery themselves. It's this chance to really focus on whatever, you know, mechanical or strength deficit they had that led them to get hurt in the first place. So, you know, Acuña's got that power. He probably wasn't dedicating time to his legs and his leg health. But this was a chance for a guy. He would have never got this opportunity to work almost a year straight on his lower half function, which was already functioning at an elite level. But now he's even stronger and faster. It could be good for him long term.
Yeah, long term with the medical technology that exists now, that's so much better than, say, when Shipper tore his ACL up 30 years ago. It's or 20, 25 years ago. It's not far-fetched to say he may be better off long term for having this than he was, because like you said, he's a guy that was fast to begin with. He was top 95% speed in MLB before it. So for him to focus on running, on form and all that, which stuff he'd never done before, on efficiency and running, and just make a slight adjustment, and as well as lifting and stretching and doing more exercises with his legs, limbering up that he never did before. His result is faster now. I mean, he's in great shape. I mean, he's put together. And as Snit said, that power is ridiculous. I mean,
it's a joke. That's,
and that wasn't going anywhere with however long he sat out. In the batting cage, he's just, from the day he got back, he's just different, man. This is a guy that, like, you know, the cliche about how it just sounds different coming off his bat, it really sounds different coming off his bat. He just hits effortless opposite field home runs in batting practice.
He just flips it out. That was probably, to this day, the most impressive thing I've seen him do. Is just, he's just blowing bubbles and slapping balls out in the home run derby to right field.
Yeah,
it's like, you know, other guys have to wait for their pitch. This guy's in the home run derby just taking what the pitcher gives him. You know, I mean, that for him to just be staying back and just flicking balls out to right field in the home run derby when everybody else is trying to hit it 500-something feet, he's like, I don't like that one to go deep on, real deep, so I'm just going to take my homer to right in the home run derby. That was the most impressive thing I've seen out of him.
It was, he hit 176, 3-for-17 with one walk and 8 strikeouts and a 440 OPS in his first 4 games back from the IL. Not unexpected. I mean, the guy only had, because they cut short his rehab by about a week and brought him back sooner than they were going to. So he only played, I think it was 5 or 6 rehab games. He didn't get a lot of at bats at all in rehab, and that's in AAA. And, you know, so he comes up, first 4 games, doesn't do much, doesn't look like Acuna. Well, didn't take long for him to start looking like Acuna. His last 5 games since then, beginning with the second game of the doubleheader in New York, he's hit 368, 7-for-19, 2 doubles, 2 homers, 3 walks, 7 strikeouts, 455 OBP, and a 1244 OPS. And the Braves are 3-2-2 in those games against the Mets and the Brewers. And that includes those 2 9-2 wins, 1 against the Mets, 1 against the Brewers. He is at the plate. I can't believe how quickly he has reverted to looking like, you know, one of the best 3 or 4 players in baseball, because at the plate, he just looks so good right now. He's, you know, he's going to cut down the strikeouts probably a little bit more. He's still taking a few pitches that are close just because, I mean, he's just getting used to being in there again against the best pitchers in the world. But he's not swinging and missing much at all. At least 3 or 4 of those strikeouts are looking, I can recall, on the top of my head. And the other thing is, in addition to the 2 homers, he had a single off the bricks, like a foot below the top of that right field wall. That's a home run in most ballparks. Line drive, opposite field. And then he had a double yesterday that was a foot below the left field wall. So he could have easily have 4 homers in these last 5 games.
Yeah, and he's going. I mean, I wasn't worried about him hitting, but I think, you know, like, no matter who you are or how long you've played, every big leaguer gets the jitters on opening day. You know, everybody, it's just a different feeling. And so, like, for him, he could play in 30 rehab games in the minor leagues. That first, he's going to have a different type of adrenaline he's experienced that first week back. And I think
that's what he said.
Yeah, he was trying to do something. Yeah. So I think now he's getting comfortable, settled in. It's not new anymore. He's getting back into the flow of it and playing like himself.
And the first game, first 3 at bats, you can just throw those out. He said, I was so jacked up.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
And you know, he wanted to get that first homer out of the way.
Yeah.
Even though he fell down on it. That's funny.
Yeah. Another thing that he did that I've never seen anybody else do. I know there have been a few guys hit home runs because ESPN showed a clip of them that he hit that ball 450 feet while falling.
I know.
It was unbelievable. And that's with these balls that aren't flying either.
No. That ball would have been 480 with the balls last year.
He's just unbelievable, man. This kid is unbelievable talent.
He gets every ounce out of that body.
And I forgot because it's been a year and they win the World Series without him. So it's easy to forget how much fun it is watching him, how exciting he is because they win the World Series without him, you know? So you're thinking all these other guys doing. It's just different when he's in a lineup. It's a different feel when he walks to the plate with that music that he plays, the Latin music that he's got going when he steps to the plate. And you think from pitch one, it might be going out. You don't get that feeling with anybody else.
No, you got to tune in because every day there's a chance that he does something you've never seen before, something special, like falling down and hitting a ball 450.
Yeah.
You know, and I was kind of curious with the new balls if his opposite field power would stay because, you know, I've been just looking around the league at the guys that had those big jumps, like a Ketel Marte or somebody that was like a 12 homer guy and then went to 30. And I was thinking, you know, normally guys that are hitting the balls opposite field are big dudes.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking, you know, he's not that big. I know he's got a special swing. I want to see if these balls are still getting out to right field. And it wasn't quite opposite field home run, you know, the one he fell down on. It was a little right of center field, but it was still, that was the ball I was curious and hit it over the bullpen. Like his power is just, he might as well be standing.
Yeah.
If he gets a ball, it's going out.
And he's about 50 pounds lighter.
At least.
And about 70 pounds lighter than Judge.
Yeah.
If he played in Yankee Stadium, oh my God.
He'd hit 390.
The home runs that he'd hit there, the opposite fields. So that's the big thing. I mean, and he's back, so it's just different now. And, man, you know, there's only four people in the 40-40 club. I don't know that there has ever been a player more designed for 40-40 than this guy, even in this era when they're not running anymore. Now, if he'd have played 10 years ago, 15 years ago,
oh, yeah.
I honestly believe he'd be a 50-50 candidate. Or at least 40 homers, 50 stolen bases, because when they ran a lot more. But he's doing it. He's running more now, so we'll see. But I think he might be able to get 30-30 this year after missing as many games as he did. I think he can get 30-30 this year.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. The only thing that's tough about it is you got, you know, I'd say Riley's probably the best power bat in the lineup just consistently right now. But you got Olsen, who you're expecting to be a huge power guy.
Right.
You hope Acuna runs early and doesn't take the bat out of his hand.
Right.
Where he has to keep taking pitches and stuff. But I don't know I'm sure Olsen won't care, and he's used to that. But
unfortunately, he takes a lot of walks. Olsen does.
He's a patient hitter, which is really good. So it gives Acuna time to steal.
So you got that going, and that's reason enough for Braves fans to feel pretty a lot more upbeat than they did a week ago about where this team is, because it's just a different team with Acuna in, and everybody feeds off it. I mean, I know these are major leaguers, but they all feed off of him and the energy that he brings because they know how different he is than them. I mean, even Austin Riley, a guy who was a first team all MLB last year, he talks about Acuna like he's just a different breed, man. He's a different type talent. So, and how about the LeBron James? How about Acuna, who is one of the best three or four guys in his sport when he's healthy, like he is now? How about Acuna being so excited about one of the best guys in another sport, just because LeBron has been around so long? He's a guy Acuna grew up watching, but he got so excited. He was like a little kid that LeBron tweeted to him, you know, about that the silencer celebration he did after the home run. I just thought it was great. It reminds you how young Acuna is and how young a lot of these guys are when they can be so jacked up about LeBron James tweeting them.
Well, how old is Acuna? He's 24, 23?
He's like 24. I think he's 24. 24. And LeBron's almost 40. So
yeah, so he was probably like 12 years old when.
Yeah. Oh, when yeah.
In 03 when LeBron got into the league.
Yeah, Acuna is 24.
I mean, that's a kid. When LeBron started playing, you know, and LeBron was the biggest thing ever. I remember we graduated the same year, and I remember seeing that article about him on the cover of Sports Illustrated. But, I mean, he's been the biggest thing in basketball for however long. So if you're a basketball fan and you know Acuna plays because he can dunk. You've seen him dunk.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, we saw him dunk in that game that he organizes or takes part in back in Venezuela. Yeah.
It's weird for me to realize because I grew up with Jordan, but LeBron is Michael Jordan to all these kids. So
yeah, it is.
No matter how big you get in any sport, I mean, LeBron's worldwide.
And he's transcended the sport, long since transcended the sport too. So.
Yeah.
And they're both Nike guys too. So now Acuna's a Nike guy. It was New Balance before this year. So
I think that celebration's called the silencer, though. The silencer. I think you're supposed to do it on the road.
Yeah, I don't think Acuña was thinking about it. He just did it.
Yeah.
He just did it. Acuña does stuff off the top of his head, I think, man, because he just
likes it. Yep.
He feels something, he just does it.
I bet you. So, I bet you he had that plan. I bet you he wanted to do it on that first one he fell down on.
Yeah.
But it'd be kind of awkward after falling down to get up and do it.
Eric, let's hear from today's sponsors.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So that's the good. That's the really good. Then we got. We'll talk a little bit about Charlie and the progress he made yesterday in his start, which was much better than the last. Really, it was only his second decent start of the year because he'd had four bad ones between the one San Diego, the first start, which was pretty good, and this one. But Tyler Matzek, he has a 5.59 ERA in 12 appearances this year, 9 strikeouts. 8 walks, 8 runs, 6 earned, 6 hits allowed, and 9 2/3 innings.
Mm-hmm.
His past 3 appearances, he's allowed 2 hits, 4 runs, 3 earned, and this is the alarming part, 6 walks with just 1 strikeout in 2 innings. And that included the 5 walks in a span of 3 outs. He only recorded 3 outs in the two appearances before yesterday. He didn't get out of either one of those appearances. Only recorded 3 outs, gave up 5 walks. Yesterday was a little better. 2 runs, 2 hits, but only 1 walk in a 9-0 game. So that's hence the 9-2 final.
Yeah.
You watched yesterday, and you had your thoughts about what he was doing yesterday, why he didn't walk anybody, but he gave up those hits.
I mean, I just think if you're him, you know, no matter how much you think you've conquered the yips, anytime you start walking guys or having trouble throwing strike, that bugs in there. And, you know, I think it was really beneficial that the Braves got him a big lead where it takes one of the pressures of putting up a zero out of it. And it looked to me like yesterday he was just determined to throw strikes. He looked a little less aggressive with everything, you know.
Right.
He looked a little more timid and he wasn't finishing the pitches the same where, you know, maybe that's the situation too. You know, there's no adrenaline there.
Right.
But I just think that's something that always scares me. Anytime I see him throw a pitch nowhere close or walk a few guys, I think, shit, you know, the yips could come back. And you gotta figure that doubt's in his head a little bit there too. I don't know what he did to get through it because it's not something a lot of guys come back from, and I always admire him for that. But I definitely thought he didn't look like he wanted to just dominate hitters yesterday, like he had a different thing in mind.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, everybody's thinking about the yips. I mean, you can't not think about it. When the guy's career almost ended, he was away from baseball for a couple of years, away from the majors for like 5. And, I mean, I would go so far as to say almost nobody comes back from the yips, especially a pitcher. I mean, we saw a pitcher have to become an outfielder when he did come back, you know?
Yeah.
So all the credit in the world to Matzek for overcoming something that so few people have ever overcome. A lot of guys have continued their careers by just kind of working around it, you know, and never being the same, whether it was the second baseman, Knoblauch, and people that couldn't throw to first base anymore. Or that was Knoblauch, right? Chuck Knoblauch? Yeah. Or Steve Sachs, the one that was like the original guy. And, you know, it's just been, this is one of those things that nobody's ever figured out why it happens. But when it happens, it's so bad that it's called it, you know? I mean, people don't even want to talk about how bad what it is because it's just, There's no real answers to it. And this guy overcame that. So you got to think that he's good. If he overcame it before, when his whole career seemed like it was over, that he's going to be able to get through this now. And yesterday was progress. You got to really hope that yesterday's progress, because just to refresh people on how good Tyler Matzik has been. This is a guy that's got a nickname, Nutsack, for a reason.
Yeah.
A non-closer who got as big of an ovation as any Brave at the introductions after the World Series at the Victory Parade, and again on opening day. That's not only not typical of relievers, it's almost unheard of for non-closing relievers. But he did. That's how popular and how everybody respects how big of an impact he had on the season last year. They don't win a World Series without Tyler Matzik.
Oh, they don't make it to the World Series, I don't think.
Agreed. And the year before, they don't get to the NLCS without him. So, right. But here's how good he was. 2.64 ERA in 90 appearances during the 2020 to 2021 seasons, including the shortened 2020 season. 120 strikeouts, 47 walks, 92 innings. That included last year, which was kind of a star-making season for him. 2.57 ERA, 69 appearances, 77 strikeouts, 63 innings. He had 37 walks in those 63 innings, but he only gave up 40 hits, including three homers. I mean, he was all but unhittable a lot of the time. Then there was his postseason, which was off the charts good. He pitched in 13 of the Braves' 16 games, had a 1.72 ERA, 24 strikeouts and four walks with 10 hits and three runs allowed in 15 and two-thirds innings. The guy was unbelievably good in the postseason. In 20 postseason appearances over the last 2 years, Matzik has a 1.48 ERA with 38 strikeouts and seven walks and 24 and a third innings. I mean, that, for a guy that once had his career derailed by the yips, to come through on the biggest stages like that again and again and again is really remarkable.
Yeah, it's insane. You know, I watched him all year long last year, and I just thought, what a feeling it would be to be. I mean, there's nothing. You know, even for me as a retired player, when I throw a baseball and I can't make it do the shit I used to be able to make it do anymore, it's so deflating. And to have been where he was still fully able physically, and his brain was just getting in the way. I mean, there's no darker place to be, I don't think, as a professional athlete than the yips, where you know you're physically capable, you could do it yesterday, and all of a sudden today you're throwing balls into the dugout. And it destroys guys, you know, where they can't even watch baseball or think about baseball or talk about baseball again. To keep fighting and get through that, I mean, it just takes a special person. And so when he was having all that success, especially that game against the Dodgers last year, for me, as just a, you know, an outsider looking in now, I have never been happier for a player in general than that. Maybe Trey Mancini, who had to take time off when he got cancer, but just for a guy to beat something and be back on the field, succeeding and doing well, I was just blown away that he could do that. And I also, you know, I wondered, all right, as the pressure mounts and rises,
right,
and the anxiety gets higher and the stress gets higher, could it kick back in? How is he going to handle it? And it was like, whatever he did mentally to get himself in that place where he could beat the yips in general, it made pressure not even affect him. He got better the more pressure was on him. Yeah, it was impressive.
He didn't just beat the yips. He came back and succeeded in the biggest stage, in the highest pressure, when there was no margin for error.
None.
Like, with the bases loaded, he comes in, and what do you have to do to get out of it? Double plays or strikeouts. You know, and he did it. So, I mean, he beat the yips in the biggest way you could possibly beat the yips. You know, it'd be like the guy, the PGA golfer who can no longer putt, who has the yips, all of a sudden becoming the best putter on the tour again. You know, I mean, that's how.
Thinking like a 30 footer to win.
Right. I mean, that's how phenomenal the degree to which he beat the yips. So, that'd be why I would be confused, I guess, but the yips are confusing anyway, as to why it would return in April, early May, in these relatively meaningless games, you know, after he got through it in the postseason. But if he did walk a couple of guys, you don't know what's in the back of your mind. The mind's a fucking weird thing, man, when that could be triggered. So,
but it's never gone. I think that it's just, it's, you beat it and you learn how to cope with it and you learn how to manage it. But if you're a guy that was pre-wired to get it in the first place, you know, something about your brain that can completely shut you down physically because of these thoughts that are going through it, and this, you know, just lack of being fluid and just not being able to function all of a sudden, something that you've done your whole life.
Yeah.
I think that bug is always in there. And, you know, if I'd had it in the past and I came into a game, it's like every ball you throw, that pressure mounts more to throw the next one. You put more pressure on yourself. And that's kind of what happens in major league debuts.
Yeah.
Guys getting called up to the big leagues, your first time in the playoffs, all these things, is you have this level of adrenaline and anxiety that you're not used to. And
yeah.
You can't move the same. You can't grip the ball the same. And so the yips is kind of like something that's just always there waiting to pop up. And yeah, I mean, so when he struggles like that, I'm always thinking, shit, please don't come back. Please don't come back just for him. I got to imagine he, no matter how tough he is, kind of thinks the same thing.
Yeah. So my question, I guess, would be, yesterday the stuff was off just a little bit from what it's been, because people keep thinking, is he hurt, whatever, because his stuff, it's almost the same as last year. And that's what I'm thinking. Yesterday, that would be why it would be down a mile an hour or two. If he's trying to aim the ball, maybe that's his first step in getting through this, making sure he doesn't walk anybody. And then next time he comes out, he can unleash again. But, and my other question was for you is, he threw so much. Remember, he had a streak going. It was like, I think the first 11 or 10 postseason appearances, postseason game, he pitched in every game.
Yep.
And he pitched into November last year.
Yeah.
After making 69 appearances during the season. Could we be seeing some residual from that? And if so, that seems like the kind of thing that he could work through during the year and regain that as we go along, if he's not overused early, if they're pretty careful with how they use him early, that he could get that back before too much longer. Because he had a shorter offseason than ever, plus spring training was half the length of it usually is too.
Well, and that's another way you
contribute.
That's another way you'll walk guys too, is if you have a little bit of a dead arm.
Yeah.
You know, when your arms, you don't necessarily feel anything when your arm's tired. The shit's just not there. Like you go to throw, and all of a sudden you feel fine, you feel normal, and guys are on your shit, and you're throwing 94 instead of him throwing 98.
Yeah.
So then you go try to get it, and that's another way you walk guys, is trying to chase velocity. So it could be something like that where, you know, his arm's just beat up and dead, and he just doesn't feel the same, and he's searching for it. And, you know, your first instinct when you're down throwing is to go get more, try harder and try harder. And so it might have been a big step for him yesterday to just be like, look, maybe I throw 94, 95 this early in the season.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I'm just down right now and I just need to get it in the zone and still throw relaxed and fluid versus trying to go get it. When you try to go get it and it's not there.
Yeah.
That's when you misfire, you yank it and you push it and you have all these misses and start walking guys and then leaving balls middle and they get hit because your arm's not there and you're flat. You know, I mean, it can kind of pile up and snowball on you real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, here's a guy that was Tyler Nutsack in November pitching and the world is heralding him and the stadiums are just, you know, cheering for him. And I mean, he's got this incredible rush that he's never had before. And he's relatively late in career to have these for the first times because he had that long period away. And then he pitches into November. Then he comes back and I don't know how much he pitched in the offseason, but I would think that with him getting a lot of notoriety and all that and then everything being lockout and he's a reliever – I doubt he pitched a lot in the offseason to hitters or anything like that, you know?
Yeah.
So that, and then postseason is, spring training is condensed. A lot of guys go through dead arm late in spring training. Well, they didn't even have a chance to get to dead arm stage this year in spring training. So I think some guys, as Snit said, some guys are going through that dead arm. They went through it back in early April, mid April. It could be something like that. You know, it could all just be contributed to it. And the yips might not have anything to do with this. He might just be simply going through that. Whereas a guy that was pitching, with this adrenaline high and pitching the best baseball of his life into November.
Yeah. And if you look at it, you know, he's never really had that 70 game season out of the pen.
Right.
He's pitched 33 games one year in the minors. He was a starter for a while. That first year that you go out and throw 70 games and then however many more in the postseason,
13 more in the postseason.
13 more in the postseason, all high stress, all max effort.
82 appearances last year.
You know, I mean, it's kind of the perfect storm to get in this kind of funk is having that. Yeah, it's weird because when you're throwing, you know it's not there, but you don't know why.
Right.
And if someone could just tell you, like, look, dude, talk sense into you. You threw 85 games last year, high stress. You've never been through that workload. Your arm's not going to be the same the next season. especially if you try to go get it. You know, if you're smart and you just pitch and your team manages you well, slowly that's going to come back. But when you try to just be the same guy you were in November and early April with a short spring training, it's easy to find yourself kind of overthrowing and missing a lot.
So he's one of those guys that if he'd had a normal length spring training, he and those other stud relievers from then, he wouldn't even hardly have even pitched those guys until the last 2 or 3 weeks of camp. Early on, they would barely have even pitched.
Yep.
But they couldn't do that with this spring training. So it was just all jacked up, you know. So I think, like you said, I think it's a perfect storm. I mean, this is a guy that had been an indie ball, bouncing around, gone to sign with AAA to revive his career, and all of a sudden he's the biggest setup guy on a team that's going to win the World Series. And then Luke Jackson gets hurt before spring training's even over. So there's even more pressure on Masick to be the setup guy, you know?
And more games they want to use him.
Yeah. So,
you know, it's harder to rest him.
And might just have to ease him through this thing.
Yeah, and that's why yesterday was so important, because you can't come in and say, I'm just going to throw strikes today and give up a two spot and feel what you need to feel like in a one-run game. And every game has been close so far this season, especially when he's been coming in, because he's their guy.
Yeah.
You know, they need him to be that guy from last year, to at least expect it. And so it's so nice. Blowouts are so nice for the bullpen because if you're Matzik and you've been good and you're up 9-1 in the third inning, you just put your feet up. You know, if the game starts getting a little hairy, you start stretching. But just those mental days off, if you've been struggling a little bit, are so nice.
Guys, let's take a quick break and then we'll finish up the show.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
Yeah, so they went a 2 out of 3 yesterday, and now they got Boston coming in, and Boston is struggling. They come in for a 2-game series at Truist Tuesday, Wednesday, so the Braves have got a chance, really, to get this momentum going with another series win. So, you know, after not winning a series at all in their first, five, they took 2 out of 3 from the Cubs. Then they had that horrible start to the road trip with losing 2 out of 3 to Texas, but since then, you know, you're looking pretty good. In your last 5, you've won, 2 of them, split a 4-gamer with the Mets and lost that one to Texas. So it's definitely progress. And then you beat Boston, you got some momentum going. If you got a chance to sweep them. You got Kyle Wright going in the first one. He's 3-1 with a 1.74 ERA. I talked to him yesterday after the game, and he said, I feel like we're still coming into our own. We struggled early on, but we're starting to play better baseball. So far, we haven't played complementary baseball. We'll do one of the facets really well. But it seems like we're starting to put some stuff together. Played really good teams this week. It feels good to split with the Mets and win this series for sure, and definitely move in the right direction. And he commented on how much bigger it is having Acuña as well, just what he does, the energy he brings. A lot of the guys were talking about that. So they got a real chance, with, you know, if you get Charlie going and get him back to some semblance of last year, then you're looking at this rotation, man, at the top now with Kyle and Max. Max is pitching again like a Cy Young. You know, he looks terrific lately. But you got Kyle Wright, who's got a 1.74 ERA and five starts. Max, who's got a 2.68 and six, and that included the rough one early. So he's been terrific lately. Max has got 35 strikeouts and two walks this year in 37 innings. Kyle Wright has got 37 strikeouts and seven walks in 31 innings. Those two guys, man, your horses at the front right now, have 72 strikeouts, nine walks in 68 innings.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest story of the year for me is Kyle Wright. Yeah, if he didn't do what he did and Charlie's struggling.
Yeah.
Ian's hasn't found his footing completely yet. You know, it could be a really ugly record because Kyle stepped up and
has done everything you hoped Charlie would do.
Yeah, pretty much. He's just filled right in for him while he finds it.
Yeah, you would have never thought Charlie would be better than a 1.74 ERA and five starts, especially after he started slow last year too. So Ian, after the rough couple outs, he's been really good lately, man. I mean, he's been solid. So, you know, he's still walking too many, but he's getting out of those jams just like he did last year. You know, his whip's 1.38, his ERA's down to 4.1. He'll be under that soon. So you got those three, and you got Charlie, who you figure is going to put this together. Yesterday was a big step in the right direction. So you got four guys. The only question is that fifth, because Bryce Elder is just not ready. We thought that first start we kind of took things for granted seeing how good he was in that first start, but since then he just wasn't the same, and he got shipped down to AAA. Huascar Noah, he broke his hand last year, and I hope he didn't break his career because he just has not been
right.
You know, he got beat up the other day in AAA. He gave up a grand slam and a home run in that game, so he just can't. He just cannot get back to where he was so far. So that's a mystery to me how he's not been able to recover that yet. So I think. I think you might be going, you're going to go with Spencer Strider as your fifth starter probably soon. And if not, you're going to go with him piggybacking your opener and doing what he did the other day when Strider was phenomenal after Chavez had that rough first inning as an opener. I'm just blown away by behind, if Kyle Wright is the biggest story, and I agree he is pitching-wise, Spencer Strider is the second biggest because this guy's been terrific.
Well, he hasn't been in as big big enough role to have that impact that Kyle's had.
Right.
And I don't understand always maybe it's just to take pressure off him doing the opener thing, trying to get him off on the right foot, let Chavez face that 1-2-3, maybe 4.
Yeah.
But
I thought they were trying to have him fit. The idea was have Chavez face the first guys. And that way you could have Strider at least go three innings and only face the top of the order once.
Right.
But I also think he's getting past that now because he went five and he was terrific. And he's showing that he can handle not just the middle and the bottom of the order guys. He can dominate the top of the order guys with that stuff he's got. Yeah. Even if he's only a two-pitch guy right now.
Yeah. I think he's got to start getting starts.
I do too. I mean, it's next time through. I think you got to at least try and see where he's at. He's obviously the pressure is just this. I don't think it's a bother. I think that was the other part of it is, you know how it goes. If he knows he's starting, he's got time to think about it, get warmed up and all that. If he knows he's coming in relief and it could be in the second inning or it could be the fourth inning or whatever. But it's different warming up in the pen, right, than it is warming up to start the game?
Yeah, 100%. I would have to do that sometimes in rehab appearances. But he's been a starter in the minor leagues.
Oh, yeah, and Clemson and through the minor leagues.
Yeah, so I don't think it would be too awkward for him. Maybe it might just be a pressure thing. You know, sometimes teams know a guy's mentality. They have a tendency to overthink or something like that. And they don't really tell him when he's coming in to kind of do him a favor. But they just say, you know, you need to be ready to go long tomorrow, something like that. And they know he's throwing the second inning the whole time, but he doesn't. I don't know. It's hard for me to understand it because if I was in that position, I'd want to just start the game if I was a starter.
Hey, that appearance the other day was just – that was against the Brewers was really impressive, man. I mean, this guy is coming in and throwing 99.
Every pitch.
That is his velocity. He sits at 99.
Yeah. It's insane.
It sits at 98, 99. That's just easy for him. I mean, and he tops out at like 100.7.
Yeah.
And he pitches makes three or four pitches over 100 every game. He could do more, too, if he wanted to. If he's only going for an inning or two, I think he could throw every fastball over 100.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not everything. You've watched, if you've seen Hunter Green pitch this year.
Yeah.
He sits 102 or whatever he sits, and he's still getting hit. So that says something about Strider's secondary stuff. Yeah, but
that slider, it's really the only other pitch he throws much. He did throw one changeup the other day.
Yeah.
Let him know he has it. But that slider's pretty damn good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're seeing the results.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe it's not the best slider in the world, but when you're throwing 100, you don't need the best. You need a decent one.
Yeah.
And he's got that.
And, man, he can locate that fastball. That thing gets up on you. It's got some giddy up, and he puts it in the top of the zone, and guys cannot catch up to it.
No, and that's kind of one of the nice things for him is that's where he tends to miss, and that's where he tends to live is up in the zone. And he throws high strikes, though, too.
Yeah.
But just forcing guys to chase 100 up in the zone or get ready for 100 up in the zone, you can throw your slider right down the middle.
Yeah. And you talked about Kimbrel being under 6 foot and how it helps him. This is another guy that's under 6 foot. He's listed as 6. I think he's probably like 5'11". But, I mean, he doesn't come from the side or anything. But he is – he's got not coming from as tall, 6'4", like most of these guys that throw 100. Like Green, you know, 6'5", or whatever he is. This is a guy that's under 6 foot. And he is just – you know, he looks undersized on the mound. But this guy's put together. He's put in a lot of conditioning. And he's
– Oh, he wears those tight pants. You can see his legs.
Yes. And Kenley – Kenley talked about how I would notice this stuff though, how flexible he is for being a guy that's put together, how flexible he is. And you can see some of the pictures that are taken of him in his delivery. He's built for pitching, man. This guy's put together his body for pitching after going through TJ surgery. Probably another guy that was helped by TJ, you know, and focusing on all the strengthening everything around, you know, the elbow and especially the shoulder when you're going through TJ rehab.
You know, the interesting thing about guys that are flexible like that is sometimes it's just like strength. You know, I feel like guys that are born with it, that are just born that flexible, it's a huge benefit. But if you went and worked for it, sometimes it's not the best thing. Like for me, I stretched all the time because I was born so tight.
Right.
And if I stretched too much, I would struggle and I couldn't move. And Charlie's the same way. Charlie's just super flexible, which I don't know if he worked at it, but he feels like he's always been that way. But the guys that are born like that and don't have to force their body to be that flexible, they can get there and still be strong. Where like for me, if I stretch too much, I got weaker, you know, because you lose that pop in your muscles. But his natural muscle length supports that flexibility, and that's just where he lives at. And then he's strong and able to lift weights and not lose that flexibility. Uh-huh. It's a nice combo for being able to throw hard for a long time.
He had 8 strikeouts in that career high in that 5 innings in that game. Has 24-16 2/3 this year. That's the second most, or it was before yesterday. I didn't look yesterday. He was behind only Michael King of the Yankees, who had 25-17 2/3 in one more inning. So, I mean, Strider is what he's doing as a reliever is pretty special, man. He came in against the Brewers after Chavez had given up a couple runs in that first inning. And just shut him down. Strider has a 2.16 ERA, 1.08 whip. He's allowed 9 hits and 9 walks. 3 of the 4 runs he gave up came in one appearance, April 23rd, his only bad one. And he didn't get an out in that game. He gave up 2 hits, 2 walks in that game. His other 5 appearances, this guy has an 0.55 ERA, 0.55.
It's pretty damn good.
I asked Jansen. So Kenley Jansen has kind of taken this guy under his wing since day one, since Kenley arrived after signed late with the Braves and arrived. He's kind of taken a liking to this guy as a young guy, kind of recognized some of the same stuff. And as I said, I go, you threw that hard when you were that young, right? And he goes, yeah, I threw as hard as him, Jansen said. He goes, you know, it's special, man, to see how live his arm is and how he's developing so far. He talked about how his live arm and how flexible he is. And Kenley, and how curious the guy, or how many questions that he asked. And Kenley loves when guys are like that, young guys.
I love it too.
And Kenley said he was like that in the Dodger bullpen. He became a leader in the Dodger bullpen, help out anybody who wants to help. And he says he's like that with this guy, you know, that he really loves helping these young kids out to try to get to that next level. So Strider grew up watching Kenley Jansen as one of the best closers in the game. Him and Kimbrel were the best in the last decade. So he grew up watching this guy, you know? So seeing him day one when Kenley arrived, this 6'6" dude from Curacao, and being a guy that's really open, he's just thrilled with that. Strider's loving it, man. He's tapping into him, the resource, as his mind as a resource.
It's so huge. You know, it's, and it, you never know who's going to say something that clicks. Mm-hmm. But that's the whole point of asking questions, is you might ask two or three vets something that doesn't resonate. And then one guy says it in a way that just makes perfect sense to your brain. And you hold on to that feeling and just ride it the whole season. And it happens. It happens all the time, but it never happens if you don't ask questions or you don't have a veteran that's willing to go out of his way and share everything he knows. But, you know, that's a good thing. And the cool thing about baseball is there's so much knowledge passed down and handed down.
Yeah, I misspoke. It wasn't 5 innings. It was 4 in the game on Friday against the Brewers. So Chavez gives up 3 hits, 2 runs in the first inning. Strider comes in, gives up 4 hits, no runs, no walks, which is huge. I mean, Snit loves that. 8 strikeouts in 4 innings, man. Dude's dealing. And that's a damn good Brewers lineup, too.
Right.
Threw almost exclusively 96 to 100 mile an hour four seamers in that appearances, 81 to 84 mile an hour sliders. That was it. 1 changeup. He topped out at 100.7. He threw 11 pitches at 99.0 or higher. 11.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's like two things that go into it too, and I don't really know how to 100% look it up, but he's got good spin on his four seamer, but there's like, there's spin efficiency too that they're starting to analyze now, where it's how much does your spin match up with your release? And I bet if you looked his up, you know, he's not just throwing 99, he's throwing a sneaky 99 with some ride to it, because it's so many times that I see him throw a fastball middle up.
Yeah.
And it's in a fastball count and it just seems to beat hitters. And then you have a guy like Hunter Green who's throwing 102, 103, something about his mechanics and the way he releases the ball, they can hit it. They can track it. They can time it. And with Strider, you know, he's not throwing. You don't have to worry about a changeup. You know, you're worried about the slider, but everybody's ready for 100 and they just can't get to it. So it's always a good sign when a guy's just beating guys in fastball counts with his fastball.
No doubt.
Nothing better to have than a fastball that you can throw in fastball counts. And he has that.
So when he left the game, I was watching him. I had Baseball Savant going. And when he left the game, I looked and he had, at that point in the game, through 5 innings, he had the top 47 highest velocity pitches thrown by anybody on either team in that game. He finished with the top 24, all of them above 98 miles an hour. 24 pitches above 98. Keep in mind, Josh Hader pitched in this game.
Yep.
And he had the top 24 pitches because Hader's nasty. Hader topped out at 98.
Well, Hader's a perfect example of what I was – you know, talking about hiding the ball and release points and extension and all these things where his all, everything about him comes together where he's got some deception. He's got great spin. He's got a release play, release point that matches up with that spin. And it's not like you don't watch Josh Hader pitch and you're just amazed by his location.
Right.
You know, he misses middle and it's just swing and miss anyway. There's certain guys where it all seems to just match up to where hitters know it's coming and just can't get to it. And Strider's starting to look like one of those guys too.
Yeah. Chris Sale kind of reminds me of Hader. Hader's like better, but Sale when he was at his best and healthy.
Yeah.
But Snit said, you know, I was like, he's basically Snit. I go, are you surprised that a guy's able to do this with basically 2 pitches? That's what he's throwing. That's what he's using. And Snit said, well, it's a big arm. He said he threw a couple of changeups too. It was actually only one. He said that could really be a good pitch for him to speed guys up.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, with that kind of stuff, though, if he throws it over, he said major league hitters will time a jet if you don't mix something in. But that's the thing. He threw some really good breaking balls too, that slider.
Yeah, he does.
But you got to think.
Guys like Derek Lowe that threw mainly one pitch.
Yeah.
You know, and then Derek Lowe got toward the end of his career where that sinker didn't have the same break to it, and he started mixing in the cutter to get him off the fastball. But he made his career off of one pitch, which was the sinker with the sinker movement. And now guys have different swing planes, and it's almost like the good riding four-seam fastball is the new sinker where you can throw it and know you're getting bad contact or a swing and miss.
Yeah, these guys with the launch angle that are trying to hit homers and swinging up, and you try to do that against him, against Strider, throwing
you're a popping it up or you're swinging through it.
Yeah. And that's what they've done. That's what they've done to him consistently. So it's interesting. And there's not a bunch of guys throwing like that. So it's not like he has to worry about, you know, a bunch of hitters changing their swings and doing this, because I mean, this, he's coming along at the right time with his stuff. But I, it's interesting with that changeup, though. If he develops that pitch, man, he could get back.
He's Cy Young.
I could see him not even wanting to use him in the pen if he develops that changeup.
Yeah.
If he doesn't have to throw so many 100-mile-an-hour pitches, I think he'd go a lot deeper in games. But he's already shown he can throw 4 or 5 innings throwing nothing but heaters just about.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be, you know, if he gets a full season of starts.
Right.
I've heard that was a big thing the Astros talked about. They had a way to measure jump on a fastball, which is basically that ride I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And they would, you know, it's kind of like the first time through the league, you hear, oh, he's got a lot of ride on his fastball. You got to ride it on his fastball. But certain guys, you have to see it to know just how extreme it is. And I guess the Astros had a way to quantify it where they'd be like, he's +2 jump on his fastball or some shit like that.
And the Astros guys with the Braves now, remember? They hired a couple years ago, one of them.
Yeah, so then, but the point being, they could anticipate that and kind of give themselves a shortcut to know how you almost have to swing over the top of the ball and then it runs into your bat. Like a sinker, you got to think about trying to get under it and swing below where it,
right,
and time where it's going to be. But even then, you know, I don't know if there's anybody on earth that can consistently hit 99 up in the zone for a strike.
Yeah. By the way, he threw 50 strikes in 69 pitches in that game in four innings.
Which you also don't see guys sit in 98 throw that many strikes.
Exactly. I asked him, I said, do you want to be a starter? Have they talked to you about being a starter? Because I've been a starter. Because I asked him about the role he's in now. How is it difficult to come in and throw 3 or 4 innings when you don't even know when you're going in and all that? And he said, I've been a starter most of my life, so I'm used to extended outings. Obviously, it's kind of the way they've been using me. So I'm expecting that whenever they call down to the bullpen,
I'm going long. Yeah.
It's going to be ready. He said, my job, regardless of what their intentions were for how they wanted to use me, is to go out and just get each batter at a time. So I'm just going to keep doing that. And I said, do you want to make a start? And have you thought about, you know, you might get a chance to? And he said, I'm just grateful for the opportunity to be here. And whenever they call me, that's when I pitch. Like I said, whatever they need me to do. So he's got the right attitude. I mean, he has every right to be saying, you know, I mean, if this guy was an ass or a prima donna, he'd say, why is Jesse Chavez getting, why is he the opener? Why can't I, why haven't I earned that? But he's not a peep like that. So he's saying the right things, and all the relievers have really embraced him, the veterans. He's, you know, coming down there, you could look at him. Here's the guy throwing 101, thinks he's hot shit, but they're not looking at him like that because he's not acting like that. He's just keeping his head down, going out and mowing guys down when they call on him.
Yeah, that's a good place to be mentally.
He's with the boys, as Riley would say.
Is he?
Riley talks to me. Every time Riley says that, I think of you. So when you told me that, because Riley says it all the time. I asked him about Darno, because Darno looks like Darno again. Darno came back. Yeah. People forget, I think, when he was out for 3 months last year, how long he was out, because he came back and he wasn't the same hitter. Come back from a major thumb thing, you're not going to be able to have that strength at the end of that season. There's no way. But right now, he's the best hitting catcher in baseball, probably. I mean,
yeah.
The guy is phenomenal. He threw out 2 guys in 1 game, too, this weekend. So he ended that game with a strike him out, throw him out, double play. To think that everybody wanted Realmuto a couple years and what it would have cost them to get Realmuto in trade and then to try to sign him.
Yeah.
And they've got Darno doing, right now, better than Realmuto.
Yeah.
You know? But I asked about Realmuto or about Darno, and the guys love Darno, the way he handles
himself. Oh, he's awesome.
The way he handles pitchers. He hits, and Riley said he's always with the boys, man. Meaning, if, for people that outside the game, not really. That just means, like you said, that's like the ultimate good thing you can say about one of your teammates. You know.
Well, yeah, but that's the first thing you ask. You know, when you that just became a way to. It used to be he gets it.
Yeah.
Where you know you'd say like, "What's this guy like?" or "What's that guy like?" No, he gets it. He's over himself. He gets what's expected of him in the clubhouse and. There's this path we're all trying to be on together, you know, because you get guys that, I mean, I've been on teams where a GM's asked me like, what's this guy like in the clubhouse? And you got to think about it and give him an honest answer. What's this guy going to do to the vibe we have here?
Right.
And the guys that are with the boys or whatever, or we always said he's the boys, meaning if we land in New York and somebody says, hey, who wants to go out to dinner tonight?
Yeah.
You want everybody on the team to want in. And that's the vibe you want to have. That's the group you want to have because that's when you have those inside jokes and those things that happen. The funny things happen when you're out at dinner that you're talking about the field the next day that kind of carry you through the year.
Yep.
You get some guys that come to a team and they're just going to go to their room and look at their phone or whatever and be by themselves. And they come the next day and they're just really not on that ride with you. You know, the guys that are the boys or whatever the guys are doing, whatever the boys are doing, I'm in, I want to be a part of this group. So it's really the ultimate compliment and pretty much all anybody cares about when you trade for a guy.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to know, like, you know, does Giancarlo really have that power everybody talks about? It's like, shit, I can see that on TV.
Right.
What's he like to interact with on a daily basis?
Right.
It's a big deal.
And Alex has figured that out, obviously, from his time with the Toronto when he started stressing character and personalities and all that. Started to be in, obviously, talents first and foremost, but then he would make moves. He decided one offseason he was going to make moves with that in mind, the clubhouse at all times.
Chemistry. Bringing in guys.
It worked. They broke their postseason drought. Then he goes to the Dodgers. He sees that's what they've done with the Dodgers. He came here and he's taken it to another level with every move he's made. He's tried to make sure that he's bringing in the right guys so that they can maximize what they have here talent-wise. Especially, it was especially important when the budget was lower than it is now.
Yeah.
You know, you can't afford to have a couple of guys that don't fit in, that, you know, are sucking up payroll and don't fit in. You got to have the right vibe, and they've been able to do that. You know, anybody that's played on championship teams in recent years will tell you.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, you can have a $250 million payroll, but you're not going to necessarily be better than the team with $170 million payroll if all their parts fit together and they all like playing together.
Yeah, and it's another thing that it makes it so much easier to criticize guys, get your point across to them when you bought them dinner the night before. You know, I mean, like I could have – David Ross and Eric Hinsky rode my ass when I was young, when I messed up. They came straight up to me, said, you're not going to do that shit. Here's what we're going to do. You're going to be on time. Whatever it was that I messed up that kind of went against like the group, you know, path.
Yeah.
But then they're still, you know, we're getting on the team bus when we land in a new city and they're like, hey, come to dinner with us. You know, it's on us tonight.
Yeah.
And everybody else is invited too. You know, it's when you're just showing up, you're the superstar. You don't talk to guys. You're untouchable and they mess up. And the only time you talk to them is when they fuck up.
Yeah.
It's kind of like they don't trust you and you got to have some kind of buddy mentality with them too, where they feel like you want the best for them and hanging out off the field is one of the most important things to get that across.
So, and I think that's, we've seen it. I mean, we always kid about, you know, the Mets are going to mess it up. They're going to fuck it up. Well,
yeah, they got a different vibe.
They've been an example in recent years of a team that when things go south, like last year, look at them. They led the division for so long, and then they just came completely apart when things went south, when they went through a little bit of a adversary. They didn't adversity. Instead of handling it, they splintered, and they just came apart, and they just went down the toilet in the last weeks of the season. This Mets team appears to have a different vibe, and it's because of some of the pieces they've brought in addition to the talent, obviously, but they just seem to get along much better and have respect for each other and for the game. But it's why this Braves team, if you know the guys on the team, and the guys on the team themselves are a lot less concerned than they would have been by their start if they didn't know what they went through last year.
Yeah.
How much everybody on the team gets along and the vibe that's in the clubhouse. It's just a whole lot easier not to panic when you trust that everybody in that clubhouse is on the same page and you got a long way to go. So I really haven't seen any kind of panic from them at all. And I'm not surprised after, you know, the bonds that they've built and they brought in some new pieces with that in mind. They haven't brought anybody disruptive. And everybody can say what they want about Marcell Ozuna, and he's sucking this year, you know, after the good start, but he's still not in the clubhouse.
A problem. Yeah.
So that's the important thing when it comes to the team itself. So, all right, that's it. Braves are on a good roll. Let's see if they can keep it going. You know, still got a long way to go. Still 5.5 behind the Mets, but it could have been 8 behind if they'd have lost that last game in New York, and it could have been, you know, approaching double digits now. So 5.5 is nothing, folks. If they get on a roll, it's a they got 15 games left head to head against the Mets. So
yeah, and they're just getting started.
They're getting started, and that pitching's really starting to come together. And you guys have got Ronald Acuna on your team, man. And you don't know how huge that is.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. 7:55 is real. We're out. Thank you, everybody.